Welcome. Today we're talking about anger. It's very topics in the Bible, and there's a lot to cover. When I started my research on the topic, one of the most noteworthy examples that I found was that of a young girl, like a toddler. She was throwing a tantrum. She was very, very angry, even wrathful. Her dad was carrying her, bringing her into this room, and she was just going berserk. There was a table in the room, and she wanted to sit at the corner of the table. She was just crying and screaming, and the problem was that the table was a round table. And so, it's just one big circle. And so they gave her, like total freedom. They tried to reason with her, and they said, you can sit anywhere you want at this table. And they just asked her, like, where do you want to sit? And so she looked at the table, and she just started, like, getting more angry. It can be the case that, you know, between us and God, it's like, you know, it's just a bunch of round tables everywhere in life, and we just want to sit at the corner. With the girl, the article was about a psychologist who was studying tantrums, and he's studying the different phases of tantrums and observing that they all follow the same pattern. And his advice to parents was just to let the kid, leave them alone. As he exemplified by, like, when you ask the kid to look at the table and decide where they want to sit, they can't process the information, they can't reason, they can't. And so it just makes them angrier. And so if you just let them be, then they'll just, you know, they'll eventually just wear themselves out. And so she eventually did. She started, like, banging this other chair against the stool, against the wall and stuff, and then she just, like, laid out, and then eventually she just got tired and started crying. I don't see that anywhere in the Bible about just letting the tantrum run its course. I think that something that we could take away from the psychologist's advice would be that these things have to be, there has to be a process, and it has to be processed by something. And these situations that you come into in life when, you know, you have your desires and your expectations, and reality just is giving you a bunch of round tables, you have to process that somehow. And in the kid's case, you know, she was out of control. In our case, we want to be in control of the spirit. We want to have the spirit be in control of us, so that we're not writhing on the floor. Let me just tell you a little bit. That's kind of the intro. Let me tell you a little bit about the study and what's going on here. So that I was trying to learn about this state of being, this emotion, this response, that is anger. And my tack on it was just to look at all the occurrences of the word anger in the Bible, and look at when people were angry, and then just start trying to find, like, patterns, or when, like, did God approve of this person being angry, or did this person exhibit anger in a way that was acceptable or legitimate, or what does Paul have to say about anger? Is it good or bad? And that's it. So that's kind of how I took it. So that task is if you literally study every occurrence of the word anger, that's probably like 1,000 verses. So I pared it down to just a couple hundred. I only studied one Hebrew word. That's at the top of your sheet there. The 639 is a strong number. The word af. There's like probably maybe like five or six total words for anger. And each of them probably having like anywhere from like 20 to 200 occurrences. So, but af was a pretty good general survey. Everyone from God to Moses to Jacob expresses this kind of anger. And then in the New Testament, it's a little less daunting. There's predominantly just two words that are used, this orge word and the thumos word. Again, those are at the top of your sheet, the second and third words. So, what did I select and what did I throw out? I wanted to see examples of actual human beings expressing anger, as opposed to God's wrath. Um, because I know that God is wrathful, can be wrathful, or that there is such a thing as the wrath of God. And but I'm looking for when it comes to my day-to-day life, how am I supposed to proceed, and what is my reaction supposed to be when all I see is round circle tables everywhere, but keeping in mind that this is a characteristic of God, keeping that in mind though, any phrase like wrath of God, I structured the search so that those verses didn't even come up, and then I had to manually filter out verses that talked about his wrath or any kind of wrath that was referring to God. And I got a list for the Old Testament. So we're just looking at verses common or very human experience of anger. And Jacob's anger was aroused against Rachel, and he said, "Am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of your womb?" A little marital conflict there. Those are the kinds of verses that I'm looking at. One of the verses here, one of the first verses, it's not one of the first verses in your sheet, it's one of the first verses here. It's in Genesis, it says, "Simeon and Levi are brothers, instruments of cruelty in their dwelling place. Let not my soul enter the council, let not my honor be united to their assembly. For in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they hamstrung an ox." So verses like that, verses like where somebody's actually exhibiting anger, or somebody did somebody because they were angry, they slew a guy. Or Moses, when Moses gets angry and throws down the tablets. And I found about 270, 269 verses where the word "af" is used. Of the ones that I'm looking for, there's only 33. So the vast majority of those verses are talking about the wrath of God, or talking about God's anger in some sense. I thought that was noteworthy. I can send the spreadsheet to you guys. I honestly just this sermon almost just became a I was just going to go through all the verses, I tried to kind of cherry pick or give you the fruits of just run straight to the conclusions a little bit. So jumping to the New Testament. For the word ore and thumos combined, there's about 60 occurrences where it was talking about either the anger of people, either it was instructive, be angry and do not sin. It was instructive in some way, or it was talking about somebody actually got angry, whether the Pharisees or Jesus. But a lot of those, there's a total of 60, but then only about 30 of them were ones that we were looking at. A lot of them have to do with the day of wrath or the wrath of God. And so now we can jump into what we found. Roman number 2, verses about people who exhibited anger. Who exhibits anger? Almost everybody. God exhibits anger. Jesus gets angry. Moses, David, Samson, Saul, the Pharisees, Satan gets angry, Jacob, as I read, Amaziah, as a king. Previewing a little bit, Roman number 4 and the omissions, the New Testament saints like Paul or Peter or Barnabas, there are no mentions of the word thumos or orge, the most common words used for anger in the New Testament. They're not referenced in relation to those characters, so Paul, Barnabas, Peter, James. So that's a noteworthy omission, I thought. So these people, when they get angry, what are they doing? This is a classic view on emotions in general. I tried to brush up on my psychology and my understanding of emotions and brain psychology and stuff. So classic model is a stimulus response, right? So again, just like that little girl, stimulus is these round tables. The response is just total like crying and yelling and anger just all over the place. The other layer there is her expectations, right? I think that's a big part of it. If she was expecting to sit at a tangent, well then, she wouldn't have been angry. But so let's look at some of these verses. Exodus 32:19. So it was, as soon as he came near the camp, that he saw the calf and the dancing. So Moses' anger became hot, and he cast the tablets out of his hands and broke them on the foot of the mountain. So there's a pretty good expectation, though. That's kind of like, and again, if you had the right expectations, those are okay expectations to have. I tried to go through the spreadsheet. If I could show you the spreadsheet, and I can send around a review. I tried to cat it like give a value statement. So I just did -1 for is like illegitimate anger, or like anger was cast in a bad light in this verse. 1 if it was like is okay, like at least if it was acceptable. 1 is 1, and then if the verse was just totally neutral about it, or if it was unclear, I put a 0. And so for this one, I gave a 1. Later God says to Moses, those tablets which you broke. But there's no value statement in the verse. It's speculation after that. So I just tried to be be as objective as I could be. But nevertheless, I think that's a good example of proper expectations for the things that God expects. How to deal with that, if anger, regardless of your expectations, whether or not anger is the proper response, that's the thing that I'm looking for. And so this is going to be a good reference verse. And then just another example of somebody like having expectations, but then they get spoiled, were these troops from Ephraim, these Israelites, so in 2 Chronicles. So Amaziah discharged the troops that had come to him from Ephraim to go back home. Therefore, their anger was greatly aroused against Judah, and they returned home in great anger. So they're kind of sore, right? They're not on the A-team. Amaziah is going to go out and do some warfare. He paid the money, and they were going to come along, but a man of God comes to Amaziah, and he says, I'm not with Israel, so don't take these guys with you, because they're going to get wiped out. And so Amaziah is, well, what about these 100 talents? And God's like, don't worry, I can make that up to you. And so I think, we're going to get to different strategies how to deal with anger. I think perspective is a big one. If those Israelites had known, if they had had the greater picture, if they had known that God wasn't with them, I don't think they would have been angry about getting their lives saved in that case. So those are some good examples of people having expectations and having goals or desires, and they get foiled, they get frustrated, and so then people get angry in response to them. Moving on. You can do cruel things in your anger, and so this is these verses, as I was going through the verses, I noticed that when people get angry, it's usually followed by action, and that is potentially one difference between just general anger and wrath, is that wrath, as a word, could tend to mean the manifestation or the action that actually happens in correlation to one's anger. So anger can move people to extreme actions, and then an application here is to always give God's Spirit the control. You're gonna see that with Saul. So Genesis said Simeon and Levi, this is the one I read earlier. So basically, in their anger they slew this guy, that's it's a great example of what not to do when you're angry. That would be example of sinning. That's like sinning when you're angry. Don't crime of passion. Anger can be a very tricky thing. Emotion can be a very tricky thing. When I was studying the psychology, basically, you kind of have different parts of the brain, and one of those parts that's responsible for emotion and stuff, and for like the really like the primal emotions like fear and aggression and anger, is the amygdala, and it's kind of separate from the prefrontal cortex, which is responsible for like judgment and logic and that sort of thing. And sometimes in extreme circumstances, you're walking down a New York street and somebody pops out of an alleyway, give me your money. Sometimes the emotional responses, they can totally bypass the prefrontal cortex, and they go straight to the amygdala, and then it's just a pure emotional response, and there's no sort of that judge that's like over that. And so some of that can come with training. I think that if you had been studying that night, you know, like, well, give him your cloak too. You know, maybe you know, you're just like, you know, you're like, oh, well, sure, you know. If that's something that you had in your mind, then that might be your reaction. And so again, we'll talk a little bit more about that when it comes to like how to sort of prepare, or gear yourself up, or change your mindset, be transformed by the renewing of your mind to have the proper response. So anger and emotions in general can be very, very powerful, and you want to engage that prefrontal cortex and just, you know, make sure that the emotions are being processed. In 1 Samuel, so this is really interesting, talk about extreme actions. Then the Spirit of God came upon Saul when he heard this news, and his anger is greatly aroused. So he took a yoke of oxen, cut them in pieces, and he sent them around to the rest of Israel because Israel wasn't helping out this tribe. Their fellow brethren, and so when Saul heard about this, he was like enraged because you know you got to help out your brother, right? And this is something that happens in Israel when somebody wants to get their attention, they cut like a being or something into pieces and they send it around like, you know, if you guys don't do this, may this happen to you. And so super extreme, but in this case, the outcome was that the fear of the Lord fell on the people, and they came out with one consent, which was to help their brethren. I think, you know, that's a really extreme action, but it was in the control of the Spirit. God's will prevailed that day. And so I think it's a really good example of, finding some of that balance. One of the themes that we're going to talk about today is balance, is nuance, is things, you know, aren't, when it comes to this topic, you won't find many verses that, you know, that are just, you know, like unilaterally, like, you know, all anger is sin, or, you know, be angry all the time, or, you know. Something that Aristotle says, and I'll also get to later, is that he's like, you know, it's like a spectrum, and you know, you can either be, you know, kind of always angry and outbursting, but then also kind of like a wet noodle, and like not, you know, like somebody insults your mama, and like you just be like, oh, okay, you know, or not standing up for what's right. And so, I think that that idea of balance this verse gets at that. I also noted in two examples that two brothers. Interestingly, if you're a brother, watch out. I was an only child. And so in these two cases, 1 Samuel and Luke, so David's older brother, Eliab, if you're an older brother, watch out. So David's super excited. He's, you know, runs down to the war. When Goliath's going on, the Philistines are smack is going down, and they're trading insults. And so David, you know, goes down to check it out. And Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the man. So David's and he's like saying like, yeah, we can take these guys. Come on. And so his older brother. His anger was aroused against David, and he said, why did you come down here, and with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? Just sucking on the job. I know your pride and the insolence of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle. It's a great story, right? David, like, totally wins the day. He slays Goliath, just sets him up for, you know, this everlasting dynasty and the covenant with God, because he really cares about God's honor. And here's his brother, super sore. Super sort of just envious or prideful or jealous, and just really giving his brother a super hard time because his brother's heart is just not in the right place. Similarly, the brother of the prodigal son, Luke, but he was angry and would not go in. Therefore, his father came out and pleaded with him. I think that when you're angry, you just dig in your heels, and something that can make us angry is, when somebody else is getting treatment that, you know, we don't think is fair, or that, you know, when you start the comparison game, watch out. The anger can be crouching at your doorstep at that time. A good example here of the father trying to plead with him, you know, I think that, you can, you know, when somebody's in a highly emotional state, you know, you can... It's okay to plead with them. It's okay to try to, you know, like get them not to dig in their heels, or but you don't want to be caught in or ensnared in the same sin. It's a warning later. Okay, so another example of David, this time not in the best light, so this would have gotten a negative one. That being said, it's a little complicated. Maybe I actually give it a one, because let me read the verse. So it said, 2 Samuel said, "So David's anger was greatly aroused against a man. He said to Nathan, 'As the Lord lives, that man who has done this shall surely die.'" So what's going on here? As many of you know the story, David just sinned with Bathsheba. And so Nathan, you know, he's tasked with the prophet at the time. Nathan's tasked with going to David and explaining how David has messed up. And Nathan, I think, is pretty shrewd and coming up with either got direct revelation from God about this super clever like parable, or he thought long and hard about how to tell this to the king. And so comes up with a cool parable about this guy who had that's a goat or something, and there's this only one, there's this precious cared for young ewe, and the king comes and takes his ewe. And so David says, "Well, that guy should be killed." And so Nathan's like, "This is you. You took Uriah's wife. You could have had lots of other things, lots of other wives, whatever." And so I think that in this case, it's that anger here at the parable of a king taking or a man taking this guy's cared for you, he doesn't have much in life. This is like one of his only things. The anger, it seems like that's like legitimate. It's okay. But the catch, of course, is that he's not expressing the anger consistently, right? He doesn't realize that he's done the same thing, and so the one thing that I noticed here was that your emotions, they can be with cause, and when you start talking about causes, you start talking about that's like a logical system, right? So it's like A causes B, right? So if B, therefore A. And sometimes your emotions can work like that, if you see something unrighteous and you feel like indignant or angry, sometimes that causal relationship is there, and it's okay. But that causal relationship, there's different forms of injustice, and if the form of injustice is for your benefit, and if you don't have the anger in response to the injustice when you're the one who's benefiting from the injustice, just be aware that your emotions don't always, like anger or emotions in general, don't always carry over to every situation that if you ought to have anger in that case, they don't necessarily, your brain or your heart's not necessarily wired in such a way that you're always going to have the right emotional response to every situation. Topically speaking, so like injustice, like, oh, I'm always angry at injustice, right? Well, it's like, well, well, what about that time that you benefited from this unjust situation? So I thought that was a really good reminder to just constantly. I think that the adage of just meditating and thinking about your actions and kind of ruminating on just taking time to contemplate when I did this thing, just thinking over your day or thinking over your responses and sort of that examined life, that time is really important so that you can make these connections and see the discrepancies before it's too late. And then certainly if somebody tells you, at least have the humility like David to be like, "Ah, you're right, it was me." Alright, so these next two verses, executing is God's wrath. Really interesting. I did not know this. So this is one of the great things about studying like this, is that you just come across verses that, you read the Bible once, twice, three times, I know the Bible. But then, out of nowhere, these verses come, and you're like, wait, that's in the Bible? And so, 1 Samuel 28, verse 18, he says, God saying, "Because you did not obey the voice of the Lord, nor execute his fierce wrath upon Amalek, therefore the Lord has done this thing to you today." So, God is getting on. I think that's Saul there, and Saul was charged with attacking Amalek, and so this could have been. I wasn't sure to include this or not, right? Because it's talking about God's wrath, Technically, it's talking about God's wrath. But I included it because God's wrath was sort of supposed to be like carried out by somebody. Similarly, I'll kind of lump these both together. So Romans, for he, the authority, the governing authority, is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. So this is the only two verses that I found out of a human being who is supposed to, Jesus is kind of his own category for, you know, paradoxical reasons. And so these are the only two times where I saw a human being responsible for executing God's wrath. One was in the case of somebody who'd been specifically commanded to do so, and then the other was in the sort of a political power authority structure, so like the nations and that sort of thing. And even you might even be able to say that of Amalek, like the nation, and he's maybe Amalek's a king or something like that. So, you know, one of the themes that caught on throughout this whole study was that when it comes to anger, the verses are very much on the sort of the conservative side when it comes to anger. So, like, always offering cautions like be angry but don't sin, or like, you know, like he was slow to wrath, you know, that's the good guy. And so I might take these as sort of a verses to indicate the limitation. So kind of carving out the boundaries of when it's okay to execute God's wrath, and it's probably only if you've been specifically told to, or if you find yourself like president of the United States or something like that, or president of, you know, some other nation, that maybe God is blessing, or I'm not sure. That's kind of how I would take those two verses. They have to be, again, when it coming back to balance, they have to be, those verses have to be balanced with the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God in James. Even when these people would have been executing God's wrath, basically by destroying or punishing, it's still God's righteousness that is, it's still God that who's accomplishing righteousness. We'd have to figure out a way to reconcile it with, again, the James verse that the wrath of man doesn't produce the righteousness of God. But I wanted to include those because I thought those are really interesting and really unique verses. We get to Jesus, the perfect expression of human anger. Mark, and when he, Jesus, had looked around at them with anger, the Pharisees, being grieved by the hardness of their hearts, he said to them, stretch out your hand. He said to the man, stretch out your hand, and he stretched it out, and his hand was restored as whole as the other. So, Pharisees are saying, you know, you can't heal on the Sabbath, and Jesus is not happy about that because, you're supposed to love your brothers and sisters, and they are just, they totally, totally missed it on this one. And so, because of the hardness of their hearts. And so, he says, you know, it's okay to heal on the Sabbath. That's when you're supposed to do that. Only verse when it mentions Jesus getting angry. I also thought that was surprising because I was like, well, you know, what about the time when, like, he, like, makes a whip and, like, turns over the tables? But it doesn't say that he was angry there. Neither the word thumos nor orge were mentioned. It does say that the disciples remembered that he would be consumed with zeal for his father's house. But the word for zeal is much different than thumos or orge, it turns out. And so, good verse to study since it is, you know, Jesus. And we're trying to follow him as he walked on this earth. Okay, so there were so many more examples. Again, I tried to print the spreadsheet on the back of the sheet for you so that you guys could get the full study. I guess it would have been about 30 plus 40, 70 verses. But it turned out to be like 0.5 and a half font or something. So I'll just email it to you if you would like. I was close to doing that. And there's just a lot of really other great verses and examples of people and so much to be gleaned. I will say that I that I, you know, I'll do that part at the end. I netted all my values. I like summed them all up. I can do that later. So, all right. I'll go on. So, unless there's any questions. All right. Well, anytime you have questions, just give me a shout out.
Well, looking at the Mark 3:5 verse,
yeah, yeah.
The big expression of human anger is, and if you're mimicking Jesus, it's to heal. Right?
Yeah, good point.
So,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's not something that I directly have the power to do. So then, what's the application in your mind? Or did you think of any about how that translates to
I
us?
Think the action that he takes is, yeah, he heals the guy's hand. The anger is coming from, my interpretation is the anger is coming from this hardness of hearts. It says that he was grieved by the hardness of hearts, but I think he's angry because the Pharisees, they because it's like David's brother. He's like, you know, David's doing the right thing, and his brother's like, what about those sheep? You're totally missing the point. And like when you miss the point intentionally to detriment somebody else, I think that's what is causing anger for Jesus. It's like when somebody's intentionally like twisting, like trying to show that, you know, oh, this is the right thing to do when it's so obviously not the right thing to do, but because it could be, like, you know, like if there's actually like, you know, a law, like don't do work on the Sabbath, but because it could be, and so many people, and again, this is getting really interpretive and speculative, but because it looks like it could be the right thing, but because it's a problem of the heart that is causing the person to make the right thing, which in this case is actually the wrong thing, but still look like the right thing, but at the expense of what's so obviously the right thing. Sorry, did I?
I'm following.
Yeah. Sorry.
So, Tom, if I get what you're saying,
yeah.
You're saying the outcome of the healing is a response of Jesus to the hypocrisy of the Pharisees, where they're distorting the law, don't heal on
right.
the Sabbath, or don't do work on the Sabbath, to prevent something that is good.
Yeah, to prevent something that's good, yeah. I think that's where the anger comes from. But in terms of application, it would just, like, yeah, you can't heal somebody's hand with, you know, by miraculously. So the application is not to replicate the specific action that he did, but to have the, one of the, oh, no, yeah, this does, thanks for asking. This is a good time to get into the meta context of what I was, sorry, no, it's not that bad. It's really not that bad. I'm sorry.
Coffee.
Oh, no. You guys are great. Really good sports.
Super proud every night.
Yeah. I'll be here all week. Oh, man. I've been just personally reading through, like, the Old Testament and reading through Deuteronomy. And there are a couple of verses where it says, like, the Lord your God is doing this to test you. And that's when I sort of the light bulb in my head went off a little bit. And I was like, that's the context. The context is, because in my life, I am tempted to be angry when I know it's not the right response. Whereas, like, patience or kindness would be the right response, or long-suffering, or in the cases that God was talking about, you know, he wanted the Israelites to put their trust in him and to, like, not grumble when all they had to eat was manna, and, like, just water coming out of everywhere. And so that's the application I'm taking. I'm trying to look at these situations that I experience in my life. Sometimes I might experience people being hypocrites, and how does Jesus respond to that? And that's the application for this specific verse would be to, if you're angry at hypocrisy, make sure that he's focused on loving somebody, not ripping the hypocrites to shreds. That'd be a good application. And I think, like, looking at, like, what's the test here? What is the response that God would want me to have in this situation? And is anger really the right response? And if anger is the right response, then and kind of going back to those actions that anger can lead to, you know, is, you know, cutting up a bunch of oxen and mailing them to the four corners of the world, is that the right action that's supposed to follow? Or is, you know, loving somebody, which in a sense Saul was loving somebody by doing that, and so maybe that's a good, another good takeaway is that usually if you're angry and there's an absence of love or loving action, then, you know, better check yourself. So if I didn't answer your question, let me know, and we'll try again. Yeah.
How does the concept of like righteous anger come into play? Like, is that righteous anger, and then good. All those other examples are not righteous anger?
Good question. Yeah. So righteous anger was, so when you do research, you know, you try to look at what, you know, a variety of different sources. So I studied like psychology, you know, secular psychology. I also studied like commentators, and this term righteous anger would come up when people have questions about anger. People ask, well, what about righteous anger, and that sort of thing. I didn't. It may have been because of the verses that I threw out, that I filtered out, but I didn't find such a thing that was described specifically as righteous anger, and that was a big part of the motivation for the study was to why it was just so sort of like systematic, I guess, in a sense, like I was just like I was just very mechanical, right? I was like, I'm just looking for these verses, and I just want to get them all in front of me, and then just look over them, so that I can figure out, you know, what righteous anger, if it exists, you know, what that actually is, you know. I think that you could call this righteous anger if only because Jesus is just categorically righteous. So if he's doing anything with anger, then he's a righteous guy with anger, which you could just, you know, shorten to righteous anger. I don't know if that, like, I think, so that my part of my purpose in doing this was to figure out, this was just to sort of like throw out all that other stuff that I'd heard about over the years and just figure out when is it right to be angry and when is it not right to be angry. Instead of calling the times when it's right to be angry, instead of just calling it righteous anger, just be like, well, look at these examples. These are the examples when God was pleased with people being angry, or when God's will was accomplished through somebody being angry, and these are the examples when it didn't. And I don't want to end up in that camp, but I want to end up in this camp. So I tried to, as much as I could, let the verses speak for themselves. Did that answer your question?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, great. All right, verses about anger. So this is one of the big sort of divisions that I saw, and I was really happy to find, is that I didn't have to do all of the, I can't think of the word, but like I didn't have to figure out all the conclusions. I didn't have to come up with all the insight myself by looking at whether or not, by sort of, you know, reverse engineering the text instead of like saying, okay, you know, here are all the verses of people, just do what I just said, right? Here's people being angry, and here's people, and it was bad. The text sort of casts it as bad, and here's people being angry, and the text sort of casts it as good. Good for us, the writers actually sort of, you know, just give us the answer sheet a little, to an extent. But they make comments about anger itself as a thing. So, I'll just go through these 5 points. So, in Matthew, it's possible, Jesus saying, Matthew says, but I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And then he goes on, you know, whoever says to his brother, Raka, shall be in danger of the council, but whoever says, you fool, shall be in danger of hellfire. So from this, you know, you can realize that there's, it's possible to be angry without a cause, and that would be bad. So whenever you're angry, you have to look at, you know, is it just capricious? Is it just spurious? Are you just kind of like, you know, just kind of on the winds of, you know, a bad day, getting up on the wrong side of the bed, as the phrase goes? Or was there a cause to your anger? And then what, you know, the verse isn't talking about, but which I think is, based on the rest of the study, is a good way to go, is then to evaluate that cause. Evaluate that cause by God's standards. Is the thing that made you angry, is it a similar thing that would make God angry? If it were a similar thing that would make God angry, you know, is there, what's the division between God being angry at it and a human being angry at it? And but he definitely, a verse that again, which is a theme that I found throughout, is sort of, again, a conservative, a cautionary verse about anger, just in general. When you're angry, you need to check yourself. If you're irritated, and which is on like a spectrum, like irritation, frustration, you know, anger, wrath, you know, when you get irritated, you need to check yourself. You know, why am I irritated? What's the cause here? Am I going down a path that will lead me into danger of judgment? Be angry and sin not. Sort of a big verse in a sense. A lot of in the study, you know, a lot of it's possible. A lot of people seem to come back to be angry and sin not, and questions about it. And so, Robertson. So this is so what the verse is. That's the verse. Ephesians 4:26. Be angry and sin not in the King James. Just for the record, it is the word orge or orgizo. It's a form of the word orge. Robertson is a grammarian. He wrote a 50-pound grammar book. He went through every verse in the New Testament and gave a grammatical analysis of it, and many of you are familiar with him. So he says this is a permissive imperative, not a command to be angry. Prohibition against sinning as the peril in anger. So when you're angry, you are in peril of sinning. Is what Robertson's saying about it. The quotation from Psalm 4:4 is a very similar verse. It's be angry and sin not in some translations. Whether or not, I wish Robertson would provide more information or more support for his grammatical comments. This is all he says, permissive imperative. I don't know what a permissive imperative is. I don't know how would I search for other things that are in this so-called permissive imperative. Even if it's not a permissive imperative, again, it's the tone or the gist of the verse is it seems to be, again, on the conservative side, on the cautionary side. When you're angry, don't sin. And kind of raises the question, why? You know, because when you're angry, you're in something that I note later is that it's. I learned in the research that all emotions are biological. So, when you're feeling an emotion, there's chemicals that are being released by your brain. There's physiological things going on, like the contraction of your blood vessels. There's oxygen going to your heart. There's with anger, there's literally adrenaline like in your system. You know, it can be good for slaying Goliath or what have you. Not that David was angry when he slayed Goliath, but in those situations, you might need those chemicals, that biology happening. But there's also a spiritual component. There's also, you know, a huge spiritual component going on. Again, I think of that girl who was just flipping out, totally not in control. She was a slave to her emotions. And it's not to say that the goal is to never feel emotions at all, but to Plato kind of had this thought of like emotions kind of like dragging people around, like kind of horses like dragging the riders around. But they're a part of our human experience, and the verse is saying sort of like anger, it's acknowledging anger as part of that human experience, but man, don't sin when you're angry. That's how I take it. Robertson, I think that's pretty strong to come on and say this is a permissive imperative. Again, I'd have to look more into that to say that it's not an actual command, but it's merely just giving permission. I would just love to learn more about that. But definitely the tone of the verse seems to be saying, given this human part of human experience and its potential power over your psychology and your actions. Just make sure you don't sin when you're in that state. There's this really cool list in the Bible called the fruits of the Spirit as well as the works of the flesh. While neither orge nor thumos are listed in the fruits of the Spirit, thumos is listed as a work of the flesh. So Galatians says, "Now the works of the flesh are evident, which are adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lewdness, idolatry, sorcery, and hatred, contentions, jealousies, outbursts of wrath, that's where it is, selfish ambitions, dissensions, and heresies." Really, again, coming back to that theme of balance and like, kind of the verses that I started out with this sermon are at the top. Kind of almost the verses are back to back there in Ephesians. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath. And then a couple verses later, I'm at the top. Let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. Again, how do you? What's going on here? And why is this topic such that it is where you have some verses that seem to be people who are righteous guys, like Moses or good guys, good examples, getting angry, but then you get verses like put away all wrath. And so again, I tried to do my best at interpreting and letting the verses speak for themselves, but there it is. They're not fruits of the Spirit, and at least thumos is listed as a fruit of the flesh. Both thumos and orge, and moving on, are supposed to be put away or put off. Ephesians 4:31, let all bitterness, wrath, in that case, wrath, thumos, and anger, orge, clamor, and evil speaking, be put away from you with all malice. Again, I think of the writhing girl, just put that away and sort of come back to reality and just try to figure out how to deal with the circular table. Colossians 3:8, but now you yourselves are put off all these anger, orge, wrath, thumos, malice, blasphemy, filthy language out of your mouth. Again, these are more verses that to me indicate an overall survey of, again, being much, much more on the conservative side, being cautionary of this very powerful state of mind and emotion, and offer more of that very balanced view. The Proverbs, I think, are sort of I kind of took them as the ultimate balanced, prudent, discretion-centered view when it comes to wrath and anger, and also really good for application. I'll just read through them quickly and offer some of my thoughts when I read them. A quick-tempered man acts foolishly, and a man of wicked intentions is hated. This is cool. So quick-tempered, it is actually the word af. When we talk about the quickness of the temper, we kind of get back to some ideas that Aristotle said. He said that it's actually really cool. Aristotle was saying that you find that some people are really angry all the time, but their anger just is like a flash in the pan. Other people, you never see their anger at all, but they're just seething on the inside, plotting their perfect revenge. And other people have some other aspect of the temporal aspect to their anger. But you never see all of them combined in the same person, for evil destroys itself, and it cannot bear. Actually, I just thought it was interesting. So this is a book called The Man in the Mirror. It's made the rounds among some of them. It's geared towards men. By Patrick Morley, and he acknowledged the same thing. It was cool. I was reading something, from a couple thousand years ago, and then reading something from just, probably 50 years ago or 10 years ago. And so he says, three angry men. Freddy Flash has a short fuse. It doesn't take too much to set him off. Because he has such a low flash point, he loses his temper too often. His anger problem is a frequency problem. Carrie Control doesn't become angry every day. But boy, oh boy, when Carrie's long fuse finally burns down, the dynamite explodes. He loses control and strikes out with a verbal tirade that makes his wife's knees wobble and his children flinch in terror. His anger problem is an intensity problem. And then Gary Grudge never has an outburst of anger. Instead, Gary seizes his anger. You can see where I got the language from. Seizes his anger and plots his revenge. His counterattacks are designed to discredit the man he hates. Gary often wakes in the middle of the night, a cold sweat reminding him of the one who has done him wrong. His anger problem is a problem of duration. I think that the Proverbs, in line with these writers, really hit the nail on the head in identifying this sort of this different flavor, again, a new, very nuanced view of this emotion and this anger. When you're quick-tempered, when the anger comes up quickly, sort of every decision then has to go through like this extra layer of bureaucracy. Right, and in terms of that prefrontal cortex engagement, like every decision, because you're always angry, you're having to you're more at risk for every decision along the point of your, throughout your day of making a foolish decision because the anger is there trying to get into the mix and derail the reasonable course of action. He who is, the next proverb, 14:29, he who is slow to wrath has great understanding, but he who is impulsive exalts folly. Just, again, sort of the inverse of that. Patience, long-suffering, the slow to wrath was a virtue that was really, comes up a lot in the verses as well as in the New Testament about other, even verses in the New Testament talk about being slow to anger is really important. A wrathful man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger allays contention. I thought this was, I almost took this one out, but I put it back in because I thought it was nice that it talks about the consequences of wrath. So when one is wrathful or just constantly like angry all the time, their world and people around them and tend to be full of strife, tend to be full of contentions, arguing, and they can't get anything done because everyone's just angry all the time and they're just yelling at one another and they're just fighting. And so the good takeaway from that is if you have an objective, remember, sometimes one of the key points of what causes us angry is when your goal is blocked. But if you, again, this is the sort of things that you can think about when you meditate to help you to overcome these angers and to pass those tests. If you really want to achieve your goals, don't get angry, because when you get angry, it's going to cause strife. And strife is notorious for blocking, the smooth working of a group of people. If they're just bickering with one another, they can't stand as a united force. When you're slow to anger, you can allay these contentions. You can prevent them from happening. You can delay them from happening. Once again, he who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city. So this is super, super interesting to me based on another study that I read. So there recent studies in like the last like 2 decades or so, they were researching willpower, and they were finding that the willpower is like an actual thing. It's not just a sort of a like a metaphor, but exercising self-control, self-restraint. What are those white things? Marshmallow test. Yeah, marshmallow test. These kids, the kindergartners, put in the room marshmallows. Some said if you don't eat any, you'll get 2 later, and they said if you eat it, then you won't get any more later. And they were able to track these students, these kids, kindergartners, for like their entire lives, and found out that the ones that had the self control to restrain themselves did better in every area, SATs and jobs and incomes and marriages and everything. And that kind of self-control, when you say no to something, when you restrain yourself, like same thing with those crazy performers who stay still like in a Liberty mask or you guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Those guys, like there was one study of a lady who she said like people would like insult her and like do like mean things, but she that's her job. Her job is just to stay still, but she would just be like really hungry after these bouts, and that actually cost glucose, like actual energy. They did these experiments where they measured the glucose in people's blood, and it actually use up actual energy to exercise self-control. So to like be slow to wrath actually gonna cost you biologically. But then the hypothesis was that it's sort of this indirect relationship. The more you if you say no to like the chocolate bar and take the apple, then you will just have less energy to spend on restraining your anger or your irritations. But then they did another study where they found that there's actually a direct correlation that just the act of saying no to yourself, like saying yes to the apple and saying no to the chocolate bar, people would just be like just more interested in watching movies about anger. The conclusion that they had was that self-control directly makes people more irritable, and so that was the study. And so and that's, I think, if this verse has anything to do with that, it might not, but He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty. He who rules a spear than he who takes a city. It takes a lot of wherewithal to be slow to anger. That's what the verse is saying. He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty. It's like, you know, a mighty man, like taking down Goliath. If you can say no to your anger, if you can put it off, if you can put it away, you're better than, you know, a great hero in war. Yeah.
That right there, but we don't. It doesn't come from us.
Yeah, exactly.
Have self control. It comes from God. So even though it's costing us energy, God's filling us up.
Yeah.
Because we're doing it for Him. So to say that now we want to be watching more angry shows or something like that, I don't know. I don't go with it.
No. Yeah, that's why I. Thank you very much for bringing that up. Totally. That's where I wanted to. The last question that I ask here is, what is the role of the Holy Spirit when it comes to the spectrum of irritation, frustration, anger, and wrath? I totally agree with you that that it is God. That Spirit, that when you get the Spirit and when you're basically, you know, that Spirit's in control, that's when I think that the biology becomes less important. If not, just totally irrelevant, but definitely much less important. And because it's a spiritual thing, and that's where I was talking about, like, the test, when, like, it's a spiritual structure that's going on, and we do happen to have bodies that do happen to function in certain ways, and I think that there is a supernatural experience that goes on with the Spirit and that transcends that body. I just found that connection maybe I just found it a little too interesting. sorry about that.
I wouldn't say that, because to receive the gifts of the Spirit, you have to be willing to do God's will.
Absolutely.
If you're not, then you don't get this.
I agree. I do.
Fiona.
Yes, Fiona.
I have a question. So, I think the verse is a great thing about, like, not to be quick-tempered, not to be angry. So, when I'm angry, so in a day-to-day basis, then what do I do? Just tell myself, don't be angry. This doesn't work. So, how do you, like, what's the practical step?
Exactly. So, I wrote out some practical steps.
Okay.
I have them. They're not on here because...
You're
what? Yeah, no, I just, you know... I wanted the verses to be on there. So here's some steps that I have. So first step is to pray. That's, you know, even if it's like a millisecond, like, God help. You can, you know, that's like that part where, like, Philip was saying, like, when you submit yourself to God's will and you're, like, into His Spirit and you let the Spirit in and you don't quench it, then I think you're going beyond the biology. And you're letting Him fill you up, and you're letting Him make you mightier than a mighty man. And that's when, I wish I could see, all, you know, like, when the guys get to see the spiritual realm, I wish I could see, like, what's going on with Saul when the Spirit comes on him, and then, you know, like, his anger is, like, totally in perfect combination with God's Spirit, or his anger and His Spirit. So pray, then forgive. If sometimes, usually a lot of times, anger is going to be tied up with, like, the Gary the Grudge. And also just tends to be, like, forgive. And then, so the third thing is the put things in perspective. So the perspective is a big thing. So perspective has to do with those things about the goals and desires and the expectations. One thing that really helped me was when Jesus is on the cross and He's like, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Or just in general and other times when you would think that, you know, they're, like, crucifying. He's like, you know, well, I could call my angels and just, like, wipe them all out. But He doesn't, you know? And so when I contemplated this, I was thinking that, you know, Jesus is the King. He is the judge. But He didn't come here during his time here in his ministry to fulfill those roles. So he came here instead. He said he did not come to judge. He said he did not come to destroy, nor did he come as king, but to save, to serve, and to suffer. And that can help me when I have, you know, this perspective about the world. The worst one for me is when it's something that I think I'm supposed to be in control. So kind of like when I think something is my responsibility, and then I'm trying to like make sure that this thing happens, but, or that the world is, you know, full of square tables, but I can't do it because it's just, things are just out of my control. Like, I had to give that up. I had to give that thing. You know what? This is my responsibility, but me getting angry about it not being the way it is first of all, is not helping the situation, and it's not. It's only my responsibility to the extent that I can do anything about it. And if it comes to the point that it's not out of my control, then it's in God's control, and so I'll give it up to Him, and say, you know, just sort of draw the line. Like, I'm not like, this is beyond the point now of my responsibility and my control, even if it looks like my name's on it. So that was a big one for me. Discretion. I think that the so this is kind of like and kind of putting things in perspective, like remembering, just like counting up the costs for what will happen if you get angry. Again, that's a very sort of, I don't know what the word is. I don't know if mechanical is the right word. Cost benefit analysis, economic. But there is supposed to be that you know, that sort of that gate where you're using your mind to restrain the wrong behavior. And that's obedience. Recognize that I think that there's a spiritual war going on, and that you, you know, who knows, there could be, you know, demons around, there could be angels around, there could be, you know, something really specific that God set you up for, that He, you know, or that He's allowed to happen. In Revelation, He's like, you know, don't be afraid. Satan's going to put you guys into prison for 10 days, but you know, if you overcome, you do well. I don't specifically know what he was talking about. I don't know if that was like apostatizing, or just, you know, at some point not putting their trust and faith in, like at Kadesh Barnea. This kind of comes back to the prayer, and I just personally, what I do is I just ask God, like, you know, please help and just strengthen me to do these things and renew a right heart within me. Yeah. Sorry. Let's eat and pray and eat. Okay, Almighty God, thank you for being God and being good and being the God of our lives and of our hearts and of our minds and of our emotions. Thank you for your word, which illuminates so much of where our hearts are supposed to be in relation to you. Thank you for creating us into new creations and for renewing our hearts within us, and for granting us new mercies every day. I pray, God, that we would follow your Son and all the things that he did and that you would want us to do here, and that we would remember that we're here to serve and to love our brethren. I pray that you'd bless our time with our brothers and sisters this afternoon and our food, and that we would glorify you to the utmost. Amen.